All right. At this time, the chairperson should briefly qualify requirements for chairing a meeting at Central Group. Saturday night speakers meeting are 1 year of continued sobriety. Have Central as your home group and attend a group conscious meeting. And I've fulfilled all these requirements. My name is Kim, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi.
I love what Nancy just read. And I kept trying to do Alcoholics Anonymous my way. I had all these ideas. You know, I didn't want to do stuff you don't understand. I've got a better idea, and all my plans did not work. And I continued to keep thinking that I could beat this game for years and years. And finally, I just gave in and surrendered. I could not do it anymore, and I came into Alcoholics Anonymous for the first time where I was able to totally surrender, get a sponsor, and do what was suggested. I finally was able to abandon myself to this group. And what happened was I did all the steps in order with a sponsor, and I had the spiritual experience it talks about in the 12th step necessary for the removal of the obsession to drink. And I changed from the inside out. And once I decided to do the work, it wasn't that hard. I did it, and my life changed. And today, you know, it says, bring your dreams to AA. And I did, because when I got here, I was hopeless. I hated life. I hated everybody, including myself. And I got here, I did the work, and today I enjoy life. My dreams are coming true beyond what I expected. And I'm grateful to be here. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. The group asked me to remind you to please make sure your phones are off and to refrain from moving around or talking while the speaker is sharing. And tonight's speaker is... I'm not sure how to say it. I've known this man for a while, for about 5 years now, and I've... by watching him and walking with him through life, I see... He's an example to me how to do this deal and how to trust God even when times are tough. And he just keeps on doing the work and holding his head high. And sometimes his attitude humbles me in the face of tough times. And I'm grateful to be here and be a part of his life. And his name's Dan.
Hi, I'm Dan. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is September 29th of 2006. But that wasn't my first time in AA, and I'll get into that. But I grew up in a normal home. Mother, father, sister, brother, two sisters and a brother. I have a twin sister. She was the good twin. And, you know, I really had a good childhood. And, you know, I never had reasons to drink. You know, I look back on, you know, what made me drink or, you know, if this didn't happen or that didn't happen. And the only thing I can ever come up with nowadays is that I drank because I loved the effects produced by alcohol. I loved to drink. And I had my first drink at 15. Me and somebody split a case of beer. And I loved it, and you know it. I don't think I drank again. You know, it was a few months before I drank again. But by the time I was 16, and had my driver's license for actually 4 weeks to the day, I got a public or a underage drinking, and I was in the car. So drinking and driving started off at pretty much from day one. And I remember when that happened, and you know, our parents had to come and pick us up at the police station, and we all got fined $36. Except my one buddy decided that, I'm not paying that fine. And we saw him one day, we were getting ready to go to school, and he went by with his dad onto the court. So I think he ended up having to pay like 70. But that's all that happened. Nothing went on our records. You know, there's no driver's license, nothing. I mean, we were in a parked car because we wanted to listen to a hockey game. And I thought I had a brilliant idea that we could sit where everybody used to park with their girlfriend out in this park. And we cracked those beers, and I think we each maybe had 3 or 4 sips, and the car come up with its lights on, driving by, and we were one of, I bet, 20 cars in that parking lot. And he got right to ours, stopped, put his light on us, and we were busted. I think I was grounded. My dad told me I was grounded until I got out of high school. And I think I ended up being, it was a good month, and I was able to work time off. But from that point on, as I got through high school, we drank a little bit more, and then it turned into, by the time I was probably maybe towards the end of my junior year, it was every Friday and Saturday night. And I got busted again, coming home drunk. I got grounded again. I got busted again in my senior year, having a party. My mom and dad came home early. And at that point, they just said, if you're going to drink, it's okay. Just don't drive. It was different back then. I think at that point, I was getting ready to turn 18, I guess. And, they thought they were doing the right thing. Everybody drank. That's what we did. But I took it to another level. And I just was always fortunate, at that point. And I remember there was a party going on one time during school. In the wintertime, I'm from Pittsburgh, and in the wintertime, a lot of children's parents head south to spend a couple weeks to get away from the cold. And, there would be no supervision at those people's homes. And so a party was going on, and I went and spent, I guess, maybe 2-3 hours there, and I had to go back to school because I had an English test. And I didn't know anything about it. I didn't study, and English wasn't my strong point to begin with. And I remember taking that test, and we got it back, a few days later, and I got a C. And I was, I was positive I failed it. And when I looked at that test, and it was an essay, I couldn't even read it because I was drunk when I took it, and my writing was horrible. And I think the teacher looked at it and just went, "See." that was the kind of things that would happen. Good things happened to me when I drank, so I thought. It was time to go to school, go to college, and in Pennsylvania, the drinking age was 21, like it is everywhere now. But, back then, it was in 1977, a lot of states had an 18 drinking age. And so I would only look at schools that were in the state that had an 18 drinking age. And so I went to school in Ohio, and I only lasted 2 years. And in fact, after the first year, shortly before it was time to go back, after summer, I got a letter in the mail saying I was kicked out for low grades. And, with everything, everything always went my way. So I never said anything to my mother and father. I went back to school in September, begged and pleaded, probably did a little crying, and they let me in. And I went back, and I tried for that, we were on quarters. I tried for that quarter and a little bit the next quarter, and to stay in school. And then the third quarter rolled around, and I was like, I've had enough of this. I'm going to go get a job. So I quit going to classes. I didn't quit being at school. I just quit going to classes for the last 6 weeks and just partied and I was truly lived for the day. I had no plans of what I was going to do. So I dropped out of school, didn't go back, and I got a job. And I was, first of all, I worked in a factory. And that told me at a very young age that I was not meant for factory work. I had a job where I worked, my family had moved to Nashville, Tennessee when I was in school, and so I was in a city that I knew nobody. And I'm 20 years old. So I get this job at Aladdin Thermoses, the old type of thermoses. And my job I'd have the last couple nights I worked there was those little plastic cups on the top of a thermos. They come out of a mold at like four at a time. And there's a little nipple where the mold injects. And my job was to grab them four at a time with a pair of wire cutters and clip that little nipple off from 11 o'clock at night until 7 o'clock in the morning. And the sad part about that job is when you were there for 8 hours and you got a 10-minute break, 15-minute break, 10-minute break. And other machines, you would be relieved. Somebody would come while you went and took your break. Well, when you were on this machine, nobody came to relieve you. You'd take your break. That machine's still running. So the first night I was there, I take my break. I come back and the box is full. And so you know, I had to work real hard to get caught up on cutting that little nipple off that cup. And you know, the thing was, that job back in that time, I think it was 1979, it paid like $7.50 an hour, which was a good wage then. But anyway, the next night I'm on that same machine, and I decide, and I think that night I'd gone out before and had a couple drinks before work. And so I get there, and I'm like, damn, I'm not taking my break because it's too much work to get back caught up. So I didn't take a break, and at about 4 o'clock in the morning, I felt this little tap on my shoulder, and it was the foreman, and I'm sleeping, and that box is overflowed with cups. And so I had to, I got caught up and got it cleaned out by the time it was quitting time. Well, the next night, they put me on that job again, and it was time to take my break. I said, the last time didn't work, so I'm taking my break. And it was time to go back to work. And it's the only time I've ever done this. But I went up to the guy, and I said, I quit.
Sure.
And he goes, you can't quit. I said, yes, I can. Goodbye. And, you know, that was, you know, I just made that connection in a fairly recently. That was the beginning of me doing what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. You know, give your notice, or at least finish out the shift. But I just to say, you know, that wasn't for me. So I ended up going to work then. I got a job at Shoney's as a kitchen manager. I realized restaurant work wasn't my speed either. That one I quit. I just didn't show up. I think we had worked. They decided they were going to save money, the manager on payroll. And so I worked 76 hours the last week I was there, and like 48 of them was over Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And so I called my father. I was living in West Virginia at that time. They had transferred me up, and I called my dad and said, I can't do this anymore. I want to go back to school. But I'm figuring that's the best option. That's the easiest thing to do. So I transferred to a school in Tennessee, and I think I was there about a month, and I got pulled over for a DUI. Well, actually, I didn't get pulled over because I was sleeping at a red light. And, you know, I think that's when I look back, that's why I was meant to be a salesman. Because I ended up getting, I talked the cop out of the DUI, and I got a public drunk. So I was living with these two other guys in his house, and it wasn't too long after that I get, it was during a blackout, me and another guy, one of my roommates, and we get pulled over. He gets a DUI, I get another public drunk, and I don't even remember this, but he also had a loaded handgun in the truck that we had just kicked in a friend of ours' door and taken. I don't even know what we were going to do. Thank God we got pulled over, or you know, I might still be sitting in jail. I have no idea what we were going to do with that gun. But anyway, I get another public drunk, and my twin sister, the good twin, is going to the same school that I was going to. She finds out about it and tells my father. And he said, the school I was going to is about 50 miles away. So he goes, from now on, you're commuting back and forth. You're not living there. And so I moved back home. It didn't stop my drinking. Shortly after that, I rolled my mother's car on the way home from supposedly being in classes, but we were drinking Jim Beam all day. And I rolled her car, and I go down to, this is obviously before cell phones, so I catch a ride with somebody, and I get down to the 7-Eleven, and I know, my father's just within the last couple of weeks found out of my public drunks, you know, my horrible behavior, and I know the man is going to kill me. So I call the cops to report the accident. I also buy gum and Skull, shove it in my mouth. The cop comes, picks me up, drives me back to the scene of the accident. He goes, I'm going to call. So he called my father. I was like a mile from home. And I told the policeman, I said, my father's a raving maniac. He's going to kill me. And the cop has already, he goes, let me smell your breath. Well, it was loaded with Skull and gum. So he didn't smell the alcohol. How he didn't, I don't know. But anyway, my father shows up. And he walks up to the police car. And I'm in a passenger side. And he's there on the driver's side. And looks at me and says, your ass is grass. I look at the policeman and I said, I told you he was nuts. So he gets out, calms them all down, and I get away with it again. And that was my behavior. Until I got, shortly after that, I moved back to Pittsburgh, and my drinking continued on a daily basis. After work, I always went to work. I finally developed a work ethic somehow, and I always would go to work, but at 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock, whatever time it was done, it was to the bar. It was one Saturday, we got off early and we go to the bar, we're doing shots, we're drinking, and we've been there about 3 hours, 4 hours, and I'm heading home, and I got a beer with me because if I'm driving, I'm drinking. And I come around this turn on the interstate, and there's a cop sitting there with the radar, and then the speed limit was 55, and I think I was probably going 70 or 75, and so I saw him, and now I'm drunk, so I'm not thinking real clearly. So as soon as I see him, I slow down and pull in front of him and then back up to his vehicle because I saw his lights go on. And it's just the kind of luck I have. He walks up and he says, where are you going? Or you've been working? Because I had a uniform on. I said, yeah, we had the work day. What time did you get down? I said, about an hour ago. You've been drinking? Yeah, we went to the bar. I had two beers. And he gives me my license and everything back, and he just goes, Dan, do me a favor. And I said, yes, sir. He goes, slow the F down. And off I went. And I guess it was probably a year later. I was in Ohio going. I'm a big Steelers fan. They were playing in Cincinnati, and a friend of mine from college lived there, and he had season tickets. So I would go over there to see the game. I get my first DUI after the game. I get pulled over for speeding. I'm busted for a DUI. I go back home, call the judge and say, I live out of state. Can I just pay this fine and be done? He goes, yeah, send $100. I think it was $110, $120. That was it. A couple years later, back at a Cincinnati Steeler game, staying with a buddy of mine. We'd drinking all day. He had just bought this brand new Trans Am, and after the game we went to this bar. This is in 1989. Actually, I'm sorry, let me back up on that. 6 weeks before that, as I'm supposed to be at work, I'd join. I was a salesman at this point, and I would have free time in the afternoon. And so I ran into a bar because I was getting my tires changed. And while I'm in that bar, I run into a guy who owns the bar, who a guy I went to high school with. So you have to sit down and do some shots and do some drinking with somebody you hadn't seen for a few years. And it turned into about a 9 or 10 hour drunk fest. I'm on my way home. It's about 10 o'clock at night. I cut off a bus. Cop's on the other side. He sees me, pulls me over. I mean, I'm hammered. There was no touch your nose, and it just cuffed me and took me to the hospital for a blood test, which turned out to be a 0.26. So I slow down for about a few days. And 6 weeks later, I'm in Ohio at this game. And, you know, we drank. I got there Saturday. We drank all day Saturday. Get up Sunday morning, drinking, go to the game, come back, go to a bar in his neighborhood. And we're leaving the bar. And at this point, we probably had a good, I'm going to say, 12 or 14 hours of drinking. And he just bought this new Trans Am. Which, you know, those were, back in 1989, they were a nice car. He goes, "You want to drive it?" "Sure." He goes, "Well, go ahead and get on it," pulling out of this parking lot. So I got on it.
Yes.
Right into a tree. So the cops come. DUI number 3. This time it's 0.34. So his car gets totaled. I go back to Pittsburgh. I call my insurance company. I'm in the process of changing insurance. I already got this new insurance company, but the old one was still in effect. I call the old one, tell him that I totaled my friend's vehicle, and he doesn't have insurance because it's paid for. Without any questions, they pay him for the value of his car, minus his deductible. I go to the new insurance company. They never find out. 3 DUIs, my insurance company never found out. So I end up going to court in Pittsburgh before I get the other one, the court in Ohio. They think it's my first offense. I lose my license for 90 days because it was a 0.26. I told the DA, I said, "I thought it was only 30 days suspension." She said, "Not for a 2.6, it's not." And she said, "You lose your license for 90 days. And at this point, when I got that third DUI, I come back to work and my boss at the time can see there's something wrong. So I proceed to tell him. He says, "Let me make a phone call." And he got me into a rehab 2 or 3 days later. And I remember when I had the interview, when I went to the rehab and I was checking in, and I remember they said, one of the questions was, "Do you ever black out?" And I said, "No, I've never had a blackout." At age 30, I didn't even know what a blackout was. You know, I just didn't remember things when I was drinking. I mean, I didn't know that was a blackout. You know, blackout I thought was like you pass out and fall down. But I think that had happened too, but I wasn't talking. But anyway, you know, so when I ended up going to the DA for that DUI I had in Pittsburgh, and I'm getting a 90-day suspension, and this time I'm out of the rehab, and I probably haven't drank in 4 or 5 months. And I proceed to tell her that's not right, that I'm getting suspended for 90 days because I don't drink anymore. I went to a rehab. I go to AA. And you would be giving me, I could be sitting here drunk, leave, go to a bar, drink some more, drive some more, and I'd be getting the same punishment as I'm getting now. And look what I've done. I don't drink anymore. And I said, and furthermore than that, because I was a salesman at the time, furthermore, I'm going to drive anyway. And she goes, "Well, if you get caught, you're going to lose your license for a year, plus you're going to go to jail." And I said, "Look, if I don't drive, I lose my job, I lose my house, I probably lose my family, my life's over as I know it, so I'm driving. And there's a good chance I'm not going to get caught." And she goes, "All right, I'll cut it to 45 days. And when you go before the judge, he can cut it in half again." And I told the judge the same way, but not said the same story, but not quite that way. And he said, "Too bad, hire yourself a driver." So I make it through, and at this point I'm going, you know, I'm going to AA. But I'm going to one meeting a week. I don't have a sponsor. I had a sponsor for a very short period of time, then he drank again, so you better get a new sponsor. And which I didn't. And I went to the same meeting one night a week, and it was a 12 and 12. And I'm not working any steps, and 3 or 4 years later, still going to this meeting, you know, we would go over the steps, you know, it could be step 9, 10, we would read it, and then everybody would go around the table and everybody would talk about it. Well, I would share on it. And on something I've never done. And I didn't see anything wrong with that. Because I was just an arrogant, dry asshole who didn't know. And so eventually I quit going to that meeting, and I was out of town on business, and I walk into this hotel, there was a suite, and they were having a party, and I walk in there, and a guy hands me a beer. Now, I haven't drank in almost 5 years. I think it was probably just about 2 months less than 5 years. And with no hesitation or anything, I grabbed it and drank it. Because I had no spiritual defense. I had nothing to keep me from drinking. I had not planned on that drinking that day. I didn't think of drinking that day. The thought of drinking never even entered my mind, really. But because I wasn't working a program, I took it and drank. And that went on for another 10 years. And it got worse. And it got worse. I was able to maintain, you know, the whole thing, don't drink it on the job, all that. And I was able to do that up until the last few years. And I had ended up in Savannah. I'd got transferred down there with the company I was working for then. And I walk in there and you know, in Pennsylvania, they still have state stores, and they still have, you know, you can't buy beer in a grocery store. If you want a beer, you have to go to a bar. If you want a six pack, you have to go to a bar, and you can carry it out. If case beer, you had to go to a beer distributor, you'd buy cases, but you could not go into the 7-Eleven and buy a beer. And I moved to Savannah, and I walk in. I mean, it was probably the first day I was there, and I walk into the 7-Eleven. Ta-da! 24-ounce cans of beer. And, you know, I didn't think of it at the time, but now I look back on it. If you're buying a 24-ounce can of beer, it's because you're popping it as soon as you get in the car. You know, if you're taking it home, you buy a six-pack, you know, something. But I mean, that became, if I was driving, it was, I had it. I had a beer between my legs. And it just kept getting worse. And it ended up being, I showed up from drunk work one day. And granted, I started at 6 in the morning. I was drinking until about 4:30. And for the first time, I went to work drunk. And my boss was there, who lived in Gainesville. But he was there that day. He comes in, I said, man, I really screwed up this time. And he goes, yeah. He goes, go home, sleep it off. Come back, because I was supposed to interview a guy to be my assistant manager that afternoon. He goes, go home, sleep it off, and come back about 1. I leave there and go right to the 7-Eleven, buy beer. Go home, get a couple hours sleep, come back, interview this guy. And then I was out until 11 or 12 o'clock that night drinking. Wake up Saturday. I think I better go back to AA. So I go back, I don't know, week, 2 weeks, back out. That went on for another 2 years. And in the meantime, I had moved here to Orlando and was in and out here. I was in and out 6 times over that 2 year period until one day on, it was actually September 29th of 2006. I woke up that morning and I was like, I can't do this anymore. I got to do something. And I knew I could come here to Central and get a schedule. Because one of my numerous times that I was coming in and out, I had come here. When I would come back, I'd always go somewhere else because I didn't want to pick up another white chip in front of people. You know, everybody would shame me. My ego would not allow it. But I came here to get a schedule. And then I was going to go, I was going to start AA on Saturday. because it's Friday. And so I picked up that schedule and then was going to go to the bar and have one last hurrah. And then I'd come to AA. And for the first time in my life, I had plans on drinking, and I didn't. I never made it to the bar that day. I don't know why. I do know why. God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. You know, like everybody, I had numerous times that I wasn't going to drink and drank, but this was the first time I was going to drink and didn't. And so I came back. I ended up here at that, I think it's a 6:30 a.m. meeting Saturday. And I came here, and then I ended up getting sober at the Dr. Phillips group. And then I came back to, I've been coming here, I think I was going there for about a year and a half, and then I started coming down here, and I liked it here, so I stayed. And the amazing thing that through all of that is I never realized that my ego was a problem, that I wasn't the nice guy that I thought I was, that I was a self-centered, selfish son of a bitch, because I really thought I was nice. I didn't know that I was selfish. I went to work. I paid my bills. I provided. That makes me a good guy. I don't rape. I don't pillage.
Shut.
You know, I mean, what's wrong? And then I realized that I didn't show up for things. You know, and I always had an excuse I had to be at work. You know, but I was usually at the bar. I wasn't at work. And so I came here and I started learning about myself. And I learned that I had anger. I learned that people pissed me off for no reason. And then I learned that I was the problem. And when I finally was able to look in the mirror and say that I caused my problems, that I don't treat people the way I want to be treated, because I was a do as I say, not as I do kind of guy. And when I realized all that, things got better. But you know, when I first came back and I'd look at those steps, and I was like, most of them don't apply to me. There's no amends I need to make. I'm surely not having a spiritual awakening. You know, all those things, you know, defects of character, I don't have any. I just drank too much. But I had an open mind, and I was willing to listen. I was willing to get a sponsor, and I went to a meeting every day. And the light went on, and it was fairly quick. I mean, it was within the first month or two that I realized that I do have to do all those. And I'm not going to not drink again unless I do those. Because I've tried every other way. I tried that, just keep coming back. But I didn't add the part of get a sponsor, work the steps. And so I jumped in with both feet. I'm not going to say I jumped in with a foot and a half. But I was willing to listen, and I was willing to go to meetings. You know, the calling people I had trouble with. You know, I'm a guy, and I don't even ask for directions. I'm not going to ask another guy to help me stay sober. That was hard. But fortunately, there was other people that came in around the time I did, and they weren't as afraid to call, or their ego wasn't as bad as mine. And so I was able to talk, you know, to at least one or two alcoholics every day. You know, and I got to the point where I could actually dial the phone. And, you know, I started going through those steps. And I started taking a look at myself. And I started going, you got a lot of work to do. And the hardest thing for me was it was hard, but then once I did it, this program became very easy, was to get my ego in check. And, you know, I look, I never thought that I had an ego. I thought I was humble. Because somebody really knows me. because I thought humility, you know, to be humble, I thought that was just that you didn't go around bragging about yourself. You didn't go around telling anybody how great you are. And I realized that there's a lot more to it than that. And I love one of the definitions I heard shortly, you know, it was probably within my first couple months of sobriety, and somebody said, humility, it's not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less often. And that just clicked. That I did always think of myself. The world did revolve around me. If I wasn't happy, you weren't going to be happy. And then when I saw that, I realized that selfishness was a big part of my problem. That I did steal, because I stole my employer's time. I stole time away from my son. I stole time away from my family. You know, towards the end, I remember my own mother told me I was arrogant. And I was still drinking at that time, so obviously it had no effect. But, you know, I remember saying that, I'm like, you really are nuts. Because I didn't see it myself. You know, but you know, I remember Kim said something to my twin sister, because she lives here in Florida too, and she said something about, oh, you know, Dan, he's just a nice guy, you know, people like him. And she looked at her and said, everybody always liked him. It's his family that couldn't stand him. But I didn't know that. I thought they loved, well, they did love me. They just didn't like me. But I'm able to be a son now. You know, my parents just live up in Leesburg, so I get to see them a lot. You know, I remember when I first moved down here, and I was working up in Zellwood. I was a general manager of a trust plan up there. And my sister was in town from Pittsburgh, and my dad calls me and says, we want to come see you at your job. We want to see the plant, because it was new. And I said, oh, I can't. I'm too busy. I'm out at another store. I'm trying to drum up business. But where I was at, there was a little bar down the road from there called Jalopy Joe's. Dive if you've ever seen it. I was sitting on a bar stool there. And I remember, I looking out, because it was in the springtime and the front doors were open. And I look out, and there goes my mom, my dad, and my sister driving by while I'm sitting on the bar. My sister traveled, you know, 1,000 miles to see me, but I was sitting on a bar stool. It didn't really have much of an effect on me at that time, because I had a beer in front of me. But after I got sober, and I started understanding that whole, that selfishness, that thinking only of me. And, you know, and those things happened so many times that I'd never thought twice about it. That never thought that you really should go spend time with this person or that person or your family. But, you know, I worked hard. And I deserve to be sitting on a bar stool. It's my reward for putting up with the people out there. Yeah, and at the end, you know, I used to always think, you know, now that I'm sober, I don't know how the world moves without me solving the world's problems from my bar stool. And, you know, at the end, I always say I like to drink in bars, and I always did drink in bars, but it always was because I like to socialize. You know, at the end, I was sitting in bars, but I was the only one that spoke English. Because they were the cheapest. And there was one that opened at 8 a.m. And, you know, I think about how I know I was at those places, because I would sit there at some of those dive bars, knowing some people that would come in there saying, oh my God, look who's coming through the door. Don't walk this way. Don't sit next to me. Oh, shit. And then I started thinking about it, you know, and it's been fairly recent, that if I went into nicer establishments, that's what people were saying about me. Oh my God, look what just walked in. And this, but you know, this program taught me. It taught me how to be a man. And it also taught me how to be a significant other, how to be a husband. I never knew that. I've been divorced twice, married three times. But AA taught me how to be a husband. AA taught me how to be a good partner. I never was able to do that before. I was too selfish. It showed me how to live my life as God wants me to live it, not as I want to live it. I didn't come here to change. I didn't come here to be a better person. I didn't come here to do anything but stop drinking. But I found out that if I don't change, I'm going to drink again. If I don't keep doing what I was doing, I'll be drinking again. That was a hard pill to swallow. That it was more than just, I like the effects produced by alcohol. It was my personality. You know, a lot of people have a bad day, they go to the bar and have a drink and go home. I didn't need reasons to drink. I was going along with it. I'd make up reasons. But, you know, I am so happy with what I found here. I have friends, not acquaintances. I have people I can count on. The people that I thought were nuts, which was everybody in this room, it turns out there was only one nut. It was me. I never thought I could learn from people because I had it all figured out. But, you know, I love that part about we mix with people we wouldn't normally mix with. And it's so true. Because we all have one common denominator. It's almost like, you know, it's like a fraternity. I love when you meet, you know, when I meet another alcoholic, whether it's in here or out there, there's that bond. You know, there's that secret handshake. We immediately connect. You know what I'm thinking, I know what you're thinking. And I haven't found it anywhere else but here. And I am a grateful alcoholic. I never thought I would ever say that. But I am. And I thank everybody in these rooms because I wouldn't be the person that I am if it wasn't for you people. And I'm just glad that I, you know, I'm glad that I'm here. I'm glad that you're here. I've never felt so strongly about anything as I do about AA, and I know that I wouldn't have what I have now. I got a beautiful wife. I got a beautiful family. I got everything that a man wants. And my life's not perfect. I mean, I got issues with different things. But, you know, I like that saying, they're luxury problems. And, I'm just grateful. And I'm grateful all of you were here. And thank you very much.